We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Happy to have you with us here on this Thursday. Ryan Weber's in for John Grayson. Taking a little bit of time off this week. We continue to geek out on the explore.org cam of the bears that are in Katmai National Park.
Yes, happy Fat Bear Week, everybody.
It is.
I'm now a fan.
Colin picked his out.
I'm sucked into this. I can't turn it off.
It's so relaxing. It's just so calming to have. I wish I could put it up on one of these TVs.
These bears look so happy.
Well,
ears are back. They're almost smiling.
The other thing that's cool about it to watch is that they're in Brooks Falls. That's where the camera is aimed. This gives you a sense of the size of bears that we're talking about and how much they weigh, because they're sitting in these waterfalls that would take one of us out like in a second.
No doubt.
And they're just standing there still as can be, not at all being moved by this water.
I mean, they do weigh 900 pounds.
Yes.
Hey,
many
you know,
of
you know,
us.
Kind of crazy. How are they doing this live stream? Like, what's the internet connectivity out there like? I'm really impressed with the National Park Service here. That's not easy to do.
Did you see where they said, boy, I want to know that too. I'm sure you're curious about that.
No, it's satellite. I'm sure it is.
You can visit the full multi-cam experience. Is that different than what I've got in front of me? Let's see.
I don't know that I need more. This is full of, there was a bald eagle that swooped down and picked up some remnants too. I mean, this is an incredibly beautiful place, obviously, but the bears have got it made.
I'm on the live cam site.
And we got
boy,
a couple,
if you want to have some fun.
We got some money on some bears around here, too.
This is all of their live cameras. This is not just bears. If you go to explore.org / live cams, I see
manatees.
There are rabbits in one corner. Some of these are underwater. Tropical
bats?
Reef aquarium.
Bats in caves. And they're sleeping right now, obviously.
There's a kitten rescue adoption center. There's always the bald eagle cam.
Good for them.
Orca lab. This is... I got to turn this off because this is going to consume me for the rest of the show.
Did you watch the National Park thing that Obama narrated with? Is on Netflix?
Huh.
It was really good. Really well done.
What was it? What was the?
It was about America's national parks and about like how they were created. And I know that like sometimes the conversation about national parks can be controversial, especially if you live in Utah.
Yeah.
When 70% of your state is federal parks.
Right.
It's hard to develop and use the resources around there. And I get it. I empathize with the folks in Utah, but man, some of these places are beautiful.
There's a lion and tiger feeding station that you can check out.
By the way, this is a huge green flag on dating apps. When someone says their goal is to see all national parks, I'm like, you have potential.
Is that something that people say?
Yeah. I've seen it a few times.
Never seen someone say that.
I'm like, that is an aspirational thing that is worthwhile to try and go do. Because that, first of all, it ain't easy to see all of them. There's so many. There's some very obscure national parks in this country. But that's a very much a green flag for me. It shows a lot more about someone's interest in the world and curiosity than just the parks.
How many national parks do we have? I have 150 in my
head. I'm gonna look it up. Guess.
It's either 150 or 350. I know those are two vastly different numbers. Colin, how many national parks do you think we got?
Oh gosh, I couldn't even tell you to begin
with. It's
over
150.
It's a lot.
You could double it and still not be close.
I said 150 or 350. Am I closer with 350?
There's 423 national park sites in the United States, because there's a lot of small ones.
Does that include monuments? Because there are also national monuments.
Just national parks.
Oh, you put national monuments in there and it's...
Well, yeah.
Because there's a ton that are...
There's a ton around here.
The difference. Yeah. Like Colorado is a... But besides national parks, they've got a lot of national monuments.
Sure.
Yeah, that would indicate to me a sense of adventure.
It does. Says a lot more than just pretty scenery.
Boy, some of you are texting in. Ryan and I were talking about Glacier National Park. We were talking about Montana.
Ooh, Glacier's high on my list.
You've never done it?
No, you have to. So I want to go backcountry.
Yeah.
And you got to really plan that in advance, because they only give certain passes out and you have to say when you're going to go and what you're going to do and where you're going to camp and all that. It's a much more of an effort.
It's such a cool park. I know we're dorking out on geography stuff a lot and science stuff, but it's just fun. So the only downside to Glacier National Park, which is in north central Montana, is that there is one road going to the Sun Road, is what they call it.
Yeah.
That goes all the way through. And so if you are going to, you're more like, there are more accommodations and stuff on the west side of the park. So you're more likely to be staying on the west side. So basically what you're doing is you're doing that road over and you're turning around and you're driving it right back. And it's just this two-lane road that gets you all the way through. But it's one of the coolest drives. Do that and then do Lake Louise up in Banff.
Also high on the list.
Which is like 3 hours north.
Yeah.
In Calgary, which to me is that's a very Midwestern city to me. It reminds me a lot of Kansas City. Lake Louise, that's a great like week or two to do those two parks in one trip.
Well, you mentioned the town next to Glacier. I think it's Kalispell.
Yep, that's right.
Which is like straight out of the old west, or it used to be until Californians ruined it.
So what fences did you say are up in Montana that are holding wildlife?
Now there are fences. When I used to travel there for work, one of the biggest takeaways I had was there are no fences for livestock, or it's just wild open ranges, right? Uh-huh. And ranches with no fences, which is unique. And it shows a lot about how respectful they are of wildlife and and the migrations of elk and moose and bears and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And last time I was up there, there were those ranch fences, you know, those big white or wooden fences everywhere because the people who bought those ranches wanted to put up a fence between them and their neighbors. And also there's a whole debate, and I like to fly fish, so this is why I get super into this stuff. And in some states, you got to know whether or not you can walk up the river into private land, because typically the river's not owned.
Okay.
And in Montana, that's the case. Okay. And there was a huge debate. Actually, Bourdain highlighted this when he went to Montana, because there are a lot of ranchers that are like, you come on my land, I'm going to shoot you.
Wow.
You take one foot out of that river onto my land and you're trespassing.
Wow.
Which is true. And I respect the landowner, but I also respect the fact that there are certain places still in this country that if you can walk up the river, you can fish it.
Yeah. Wow. All right. We're going to take a break from geeking out on this. We're going to talk about the cocktail and wine industry coming up next. Kansas City was among six cities across the U.S. that were part of the 2022 Liquid Insights Tour. We're going to go deeper into that, about some of the places that they picked out for some of the best cocktails in Kansas City. It was pretty cool that we were a part of such a unique tour like this. We'll get further into that coming up next here on KMBZ. John Grayson out today. Ryan Weber sitting in with us today. And we are joined on the line by the director of on-premise commercial strategy and national accounts for Southern Glacier. Brian Masalonis joins us. He had a really tough job of trying to sort out the top cocktails amongst six cities that you went and sampled in. Kansas City was one of those. Brian, good to have you with us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. Excited to talk about the tour. And you know what? Somebody had to do it. You
know, we were just
that had to be done.
Talking about that. We'll get to that later.
So start with the tour and what the goal of these six cities was when you did this.
Yeah, so great question. You know, we've got all sorts of access to tons of data as our company. So it's a massive company. And that's really kind of telling us like what's happening now and what happened in the past. We were looking for, you know, what's coming down the pike? What are the trend forward locations doing that all of our accounts all over the country need to know about and start planning for if they're not already doing it already? So that was kind of the impetus to really get smarter about what's coming and really communicate that out across all of our employees across the country and ultimately the accounts that we support. Because I don't know if a lot of people even know how Southern Glacier's operates. Do you want me to kind of explain that for
that'd be great.
Yeah, I think it'd be helpful, especially like what a distributor does. I think that's probably lesser known amongst listeners.
Totally. Yeah, we're kind of we're the company behind what you see at retail as well as restaurants. So we represent like 2,500 plus suppliers all over the country in wine and spirits. And we're the ones that sell to all the different on-premise and off-premise or retail accounts. And so we have tons of information and we ultimately try to help our team and our suppliers succeed. So it's pretty cool. But yeah, a lot of people have no idea what we do, but we're a large company. We're the largest beverage alcohol distributor in the United States.
Yeah,
I just happen to be based in Kansas City.
Brian, that you mentioned data, it's such an interesting, I bet the data tells you like what's most popular, but I bet it probably doesn't tell you like what could be more popular. So as you were doing this tour, like what surprised you?
Yeah, a couple things really, and it showed up in Kansas City as well as the other six markets we went to. You know, we've been talking a little bit about, you know, rum's been one of the last categories to premiumize on the spirits front. And now it's starting to happen. And we're starting to see it a lot more in trend forward cocktail bars and even in restaurants where rum's popping up. It was the number two spirit we saw in all the cocktails we saw on the tour. And we saw it quite a bit here in Kansas City, too. So, but not just regular rum, but aged rums, that rich flavor profile. So that was good to see because we've been talking about that emerging trend for a while, and it continues to grow. Another one was Amaros. So Amaros have been around forever, that kind of bitter cordial from Italy. But people are now using it in cocktails in a lot of cool ways to contemporize drinks, to add that little subtle flavor to make things pop, like the espresso martini, for instance.
Yeah, give, and a, on the give an example front, of Amaros real quick, because that may be not something everyone is aware of. I love them.
I can't
stand
them.
I don't think Jamie does.
Yeah. The Italian
what's
still
a brand
like
that
them.
People may be familiar with Amaro?
Yeah, one would probably be Averna. Mm-hmm. A good example is in the Black Manhattan at Rye Leawood. So they've got a killer Manhattan. And what makes it unique and special is they add a little bit of Averna into it. And it just adds this really cool slight spice, but kind of a round flavor. So the drink isn't overly boozy. It's just really, really nice. So Averna is a big one. There's like Nonino. There's another big one out there. Cokie is another one. Aperol could be considered Amaro as well.
Love that, too. And I'm surprised you didn't mention Cafe Amaro, our local local distilled Amaro. Yeah.
So yeah, you sampled.
That is awesome.
Sorry. So you sampled. I want to talk about the experience here. So over the course of 2 days, you sampled 84 drinks in 15 establishments in Kansas City. I want to talk about the places that you went, and I'm a big Manhattan fan. I love a Manhattan. It's probably my favorite cocktail out there. And that was one of the things you noticed. Tell me about that experience of 84 cocktails and the places you went in Kansas City.
Well, I'll start with a story. So we roll into Farina. This is on our, I think this was our sixth stop on day one. And we were telling the bartender what we were doing. And he kind of looked at me weird, and he went and got our drinks and came back. And he's like, okay, you're doing an innovation tour. He's like, I have people coming here all the time doing quote unquote innovation tours. And he's like, half the time they're hammered. He was like, you guys are like professionals. We have like, you know, stainless steel drinking straws. We're talking about it. We're taking notes. So it's a fun process, but it's something we took seriously. But it's funny hearing the bartender kind of make fun of us, like, wow. He's like, you guys are really taking this serious. So that's kind of the approach. The places we went, is that one of the questions you asked?
Yeah, because I have the list in front of me. But was that, you know, did you already know, hey, here are places that do really good cocktails, and so that's where we're going?
So I knew a lot about the market, obviously, because I live here. But in other markets, you know, we look to have every market selected the same way. It was really four different levels. One was, you know, straight out cocktail bars, but we didn't want to just focus only on those. So we also focused on casual restaurants, like polished casual restaurants, kind of like the little upscale, and also fine dining. And within that, we wanted to make sure that if there was a place that's in a hotel, we visited that. And we approached every market the same way. So everything was, nothing got weighted. Like if we went to just, you know, wine bars everywhere, that would skew the information. If we went to just cocktail bars. So we went to a real balance of locations in Kansas City that really fit that criteria.
But I got to tell you, we have the release in front of us that has a lot of the trends that you found, and we could fill an hour with some of the trends. Was there anything that surprised you?
You know, I think the Manhattan was pretty popular everywhere. It was particularly popular here. So it was my dad's favorite drink. So it goes back in time for me quite a bit. But the unique twists on it were really cool. Like the Manhattan at 1900 was really cool because they used cognac, which was kind of cool. The Port Manhattan at the French Market in Prairie Village, they used the port with it. I'm like, wow. Like, so three different places, and then also the Black Manhattan, like I talked about at Rye. So that really was interesting to see how that drink, because the Old Fashioned's been riffed on for the past 4 or 5 years in a big way. This was the first time I saw Manhattan's riffed on quite this much, which was cool. You know, but I always tell people, you know, people that all Kansas City, you probably saw a lot of boring stuff. Like, those are people that haven't been to Kansas City. Usually when I show what I blogged or what I found in Kansas City, they're like, you saw that in Kansas City? Like, you saw like an air foam, like using lecithin, like they use at Mercury Bar or the Mercury Room and Monarch? I'm like, yeah, like just like you saw in New York, just like we saw in Los Angeles, we saw it here too.
We are very lucky to have that talent here in this town, aren't we? I mean, for a city of our size to have the level of, what do they want to be called now? Because I don't want to get it wrong. I don't think the word mixologist is really used in the industry much anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, it depends. So like, a lot of times they just, you know, I don't know. It depends on who you talk to. But yeah, we've got a wonderful history on the wine front too. Like a lot of people know about Doug Frost. For, you know, he's arguably one of the most educated wine experts in the world, and he lives here, right?
Yeah.
And he runs the beverage program at 1900, which is still kind of under the radar, in my opinion. You know, we've got on the cocktail front, you know Ryan Mabey and people that have really kind of bolstered this part of the business over the last 15, 20 years. You know, we've built this cocktail and wine culture really strong, and I was really proud to include that in this overall work. The other reason why we chose Kansas City is it's smack dab in the middle of the country, and it's also a mid-sized market. Because when we first did this tour in 2017 and 2018 to be a keynote presenter at a conference in California, you know, I had operators come up to me going, yeah, I could see that trend being popular in New York and LA, but like, I got a bunch of restaurants in the Midwest. Like, what's happening here? So we chose markets like Kansas City and Chicago and also Houston to kind of get that Midwestern perspective. But Kansas City is great because it's also a little bit smaller, but not doing small things, always doing really big things. So it was wonderful for me to get to show this place off.
I know we have to let you go here in a minute because we're up against a clock, but I want to ask you really quickly about non-alcoholic beverages becoming more popular. Yeah. Because I'm even noticing bartenders I know who don't drink.
Yep. Yeah. I think it's all about people finally realizing, like, hey, just because somebody's out and doesn't want to drink doesn't mean they want to, you know, sidestep the experience. So what we saw really was an elevation of non-alcoholic drinks. Like, there's this dry derby at the French Market. It's served just like a cocktail. It tastes like a cocktail. The Roses Turn at Char Bar. Like, it's a barbecue joint, right? They serve it up in a coupe. Like, so it's really exciting to see non-alcohol be done the same way, because a lot of times it gives operators the opportunity to cross-utilize ingredients between a real cocktail, like an alcohol cocktail and a non-alcohol cocktail, to get more use out of it. And if someone happens to be cutting back that day or has given it up but still wants to have a nice experience with their friends, they don't have to take a back seat. They could be a part of it.
Well, Brian, we could talk about it all day, I think, because the list is interesting and the trends are interesting. And you're sitting with two people that kind of enjoy that part of Kansas City a lot. So it's exciting for us that you are here and that Kansas City was among the cities that you went to. If people want to know more about the trends or about this list, is there a place that they can go?
Yeah, so I would have them check out Southern Glaciers, southernglaciers.com/liquid-insights. That covers all the blogs I did of all the cities, including Kansas City. It has a cool video that captures all the trends we saw. You can also follow us on Instagram at SG Wine Spirits. We have, we've had about 120 posts. So you can actually take a tour on Instagram of all the places we went. We did videos, photos, my little comments from our mixologists around the country. So a fun little tour you can do on social media at SG Wine Spirits. Those would be my recos.
Excellent. We are going to be going there during the break. Brian Masalonis of Southern Glacier, we really appreciate the time. Super exciting that you did this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks a bunch.
Thanks, Brian.
Appreciate it. All right, we'll take a break here. Be back in just a few minutes on KMBZ.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Brian Weber hanging out with us today for John Grayson. Thanks again to Brian Masalonis of Southern Glaciers. We were just talking more about this list. So for those who missed the beginning of this, you can find this online. There's an Instagram page for it. But they went through and did the 2022 Liquid Insights Tour. And it kicked off in Houston. They did stops in Kansas City, New York, Las Vegas, Chicago, and Los Angeles. So for us to have been on that list is pretty cool that they didn't, you know, there were other Midwestern cities they could have picked that they picked us. That's pretty amazing. And so over the course of 2 days, he sampled 84 drinks in 15 establishments in Kansas City. And I've got the list here in front of me of the places that he went. You can go onto their site and they have an Instagram page for it too, where you can check out and see the videos and stuff of his experience. We didn't have time to ask him, but I'm like, oh my gosh, how do you
recover?
What's that day like? Yeah. Like what do you know about not getting drunk that I don't, that gets you through 2 days like that?
Well, so there's just a lot of ingredients that you're putting into your system.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think my regimen would work. My recovery regimen, which
what's your hydration
to evolve as I get older.
What do you eat over the course of that day that gets you through the day? So we were just going through off the air. We've got the list here of trends that they were finding. Here's where they went, just because we didn't get through every list, everything on the list. So again, 84 drinks in 15 establishments in Kansas City, in part to get a sense of trends and the stuff that he was noticing that was popping up a lot. I'll just do these in order. They've got them on here. The Belfry, Char Bar, Chicken and Pickle, Farina, French Market, Graham and Dunn, Hand and Glove, which is in Lee's Summit. I had to look that one up. The Mercury Room, Monarch, Nighthawk, Novel, and Rye. The Restaurant at 1900, The Town Company, and Waldo Tie. And he mentioned a couple of these while he was on the air with us, but various twists on the Manhattan. That was like, yeah, that's one of the first cocktails that I ever... That's what got me into, I think, bourbon and my affection for Irish whiskey.
Old fashions and Manhattans are the gateway cocktail for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. Especially if you like something a little sweeter, then that kind of gets you into it. But so odd combinations of those things. There were wine trends on here that we didn't get into with him, like orange wine becoming more of a thing.
I've never heard of that before.
Me
but
either.
We shouldn't be surprised because you can ferment anything with sugar. So, of course, you could make an orange wine. I'm sure that can evolve into all the other fruit juices out there. But he also mentioned rum, which also I have had some of the most unique. My neighbors are super into rum, so they'll share with me every now and then. Mm-hmm. But I had a rum that tastes like bourbon. It was aged in a bourbon cask.
Yep.
I also had a rum that was aged in a wine cask, and it was incredible. Now, I don't know what kind of cocktail you would make with that, but I would almost drink that over the rocks. Like, it tastes like bourbon.
Yeah. It's funny how things trend. I don't know much about rum. That's one of those things where I figure at some point, this is going to be a while now, at some point I will go to Puerto Rico after they've done some cleanup and learn about it in the place. Like, I didn't become a tequila drinker until I went to Mexico City and learned all about it there.
In
or mezcal.
Yeah.
That's where I got into mezcal, was going to Mexico City where they've got a ton of it. That tends to be how I get into a thing, is I visit a place where they specialize in that. And then I get into that and now I like that. And that's what got me into like Irish whiskey and going to Ireland and stuff like that. A couple of things they mentioned on here, the use of ice and heat more in different ways, like smoked ice. I'm seeing that a lot more too. The use of fats beyond animal fats, like egg whites. When you went to Patagonia, did you do, what's the cocktail that Chile?
Pisco sour?
Yes. Love a pisco sour. And it's frothed raw egg white.
Yeah.
On top.
My acid reflux is not because of all the citric acid in there, but I had them. They're very refreshing. I get it. I mean, that certainly is a unique regional cocktail for sure.
And then I do appreciate, and we talked about this a little bit, I appreciate the push toward non-alcoholic cocktails. And it's coming up at some really high-end cocktail bars like Monarch does. In fact, they do, they have done events, and sometimes on Sundays, where they do like ticketed events where it's all non-alcoholic cocktails. The Hey Hey Club has done that. Like, they've got specialty cocktail that's in the basement of the Rieger in East Bottoms. I remember I went in there once and their bartender there doesn't drink. It absolutely does not drink. And thought there needs to be a place for this. And so they created cocktails for people who don't drink but want the experience and the environment. I love that. I love that we're casting kind of a wider net that way.
I think it shows an extra level of talent on behalf of the bartender as well, because you've got to understand how all those mixtures come together. If someone's going to be paying up to $10 for a non-alcoholic beverage, it needs to be enjoyable.
Right.
So that balance is hard to reach, but I mean, I get out to be, it's definitely something I'm seeing more on menus.
Yeah.
And not something you have to ask for. Like, do you serve mocktails? It's already there.
Which is cool because it takes out, not that there is any shame in it or any, but I like
but
that
if you have any, it's being reduced.
For sure. I like that it's just there. And sometimes yeah. I'm, you know, I'm in that, I go through phases like that where for whatever reasons, just to be healthier or whatever it is, I've made mocktails at home and I've done them while I've been out because it just, sometimes you're just not in the mood to drink, but you're with people who are.
Sometimes being the one that's not is a superpower.
Yeah.
And it's a growing trend. I mean, I've seen a lot of statistics that young people are not drinking as much, which is mm-hmm. good. It reached an all-time level, I think, with young people here, especially at college. It was clear that danger and injury was coming from behaviors of alcohol abuse and whatnot.
Yeah.
But if that trend continues, I mean, there's clearly a market. Otherwise, they wouldn't provide it.
Right. Anyway, you can check out the list online, and the interview will be up on podcast that you can check out as well. While we're talking about food and wine and restaurants, this story's been on my list for a couple of days here that Travel and Leisure put up. I'm always curious about kind of odd dining experiences. Like there's a place pre-pandemic, there was a restaurant in Austin that did blind like all in the dark,
yep.
which I thought
I
was cool.
I would love to do it.
Me too.
I volunteered at one of those in Kansas City. It was for a nonprofit group that supported the visually impaired.
Mm-hmm.
And so we helped serve and it was incredible. Like the experience, especially if you're a picky eater,
mm-hmm.
this is really maybe going to be overwhelming.
Yeah.
But when your eyes, I mean, you eat with your eyes first.
Mm-hmm.
And when you no longer have that ability, it completely changes the experience. I've never got a chance to do it, though.
I never did
but I
either.
I saw the reactions, and they were hilarious.
If I can't remember what it was called, but it was like near Austin or something. And it was booked out for months to just go and do this blind dinner. I mean, where it literally is, you know, you don't know what you're eating ahead of time. And to take that sense away intensifies the others.
Yeah.
But you do eat with your eyes first. And that adds to the experience. So to take that out, I just thought was cool, but I never had the chance to go do it. So I'm always interested when there's a place that comes up that has a pretty lengthy waiting list. And this story came to us in an area near Fort Lauderdale. Again, Travel and Leisure had this. They said, tucked in a quiet neighborhood, you will find the unassuming Brazilian-infused utopia that is Regina's Farm. Small market down the road in an area near some housing complexes. It has become so buzzworthy that it is booked through July 2024.
Wow.
What could it possibly be about a restaurant that is booked out? I looked. It's booked out 2 years before you could get in to this place. It's a heck of a story.
Let's hope that's not marketing.
Me too. I know. That scares
because
me a little bit.
My experience with places like that is, then why can I still get a table tonight?
Say
like
what?
Like if you show up and you're like, table for two,
mm-hmm.
sit anywhere, first available. And like, do you have a reservation? Nope. And somehow you can still dine, maybe at a bar. But I do think in some cases, I'm not saying Regina's Farm is this example, but there's some marketing involved with that. Kind of like saying a concert sold out when it's really not.
So it's a heck of a story though. And maybe this is part of what's doing it. In the end, it's going to have to be food. You know, you're not going to be willing to do something like that unless it's about the food. But they highlight this woman that bought this home with an expansive backyard 10 years later. Each week after church across the street, this woman would bring neighbors and her friends over a meal that included all this Brazilian fare, and that's where she's from. Eventually, she had a wood stove built in her backyard to make soups, and then it became rows of picnic tables and roaming chickens and an outdoor kitchen that created this urban farm experience.
Okay, I'm in.
See what I mean? Like the way
that's exactly
the, way that's
the kind of like entertaining experience I'd want to have. Yeah, I'm in.
In 2006, she began hosting informal dinners like church fundraisers. In 2013, Regina's Farm achieved nonprofit status, which is appealing too, because you feel like she's less in it for the money and more just for the experience. Here's how they describe it. There are bubble machines for kids, colorful banners and bistro lights draped above, a fire pit for roasting marshmallows, and picnic tables for lounging. They can host up to 140 guests. It is open for dinner some Saturdays and some Sundays by reservation only. They have a team of 11 helping to do this. What price would you put on this? Let me tell you what you get and tell me what you think, how much you think this goes. It's an all-you-can-eat with 7 types of Brazilian soups, oxtail, yucca, chicken wings, and 15 kinds of desserts and several baked dishes. What are you paying for it?
30 for lunch, 60 for dinner.
Wow, you are very, very close. $55.
Hey.
I don't think they do lunch. I think it's just dinner. $25 for children.
I'd still pay $30 for lunch.
God, I love everything about this. They have raised more than $60,000 for her church by this being a nonprofit.
Oh, that's cool. See, right? That helps encourage people to go as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Forget what I said earlier about her. I think she's on the right track.
Okay. So I'm going to see.
Not marketing.
So I'm on
so
their page
I did
now.
One of those experiences. I was in Texas over Labor Day and went to the number one barbecue place in Texas Right Now, which a magazine mm-hmm. establishes that they have 2 years to be number one. It's Goldie's outside Fort Worth.
Yep.
And, you know, we're told it was the Friday of Labor Day to get there at like 8 or 9 mm-hmm. in order to expect to be able to try all the different meats. They'll run out and they serve until they run out. It was worth it. We waited in line for 3 hours. It was worth it. The whole experience, waiting in line, talking about barbecue, talking to the cook. I mean, they come out and they talk to you and I'll tell you, I mean, I'm a huge barbecue nerd. The American Royal was coming up. So I was just peppering them with questions and they love what they do so much. And it's people like Regina too, that if you get a chance to meet them, like you just get, it's infectious.
It's also a kind of food that we are not super familiar with as Americans outside of the Brazilian steakhouse. That is our familiarity with Brazilian food. Admittedly, I don't know much about it.
I don't either.
And you're in the right part of the country for it because they're, you know, you've got a lot of Cuban influence there. And so, and Miami's got a lot of that. And so I get it. Like it's a pretty heavily ethnic and cultural area for food.
It's a huge country, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
And
absolutely.
The agricultural diversity. I mean, there are still tribes in Brazil that haven't been contacted by humans. That's how big Brazil is as a country.
Yep.
But between the Amazon River in the north and you've got Rio in the south, I mean, there's so much going on in the country. There's no way you would ever know all about Brazilian cuisine.
Yes. Booked out through July. And the way that you get a reservation is you go to their website and you send a text message and they will tell you, here's how far out we are booked.
Southwest got a pretty good deal on flights right now.
Would
you fly
bucks.
Somewhere for a meal?
Sure.
I think I would too.
Are you kidding me? Food drives travel for me.
I know.
Absolutely.
You're right. I've flown halfway across the world for food. Yeah,
totally. Yeah. To me, that's the reason then to build a trip around that for sure. Well, go fly to Miami.
Not a bad time of year to go to Fort Lauderdale.
Do some scuba diving, knock some meals out, you know, just make a trip.
Travel's
out of it.
Been on the brain, folks. If you can't
tell. Yeah.
It's beautiful. The sun's out today. Yep. It's a beautiful day. Travel's on the brain.
Yep. All right. Ryan Weber's in for John Grayson. We'll wrap up the hour next here on KMBZ. Ryan Weber in for John Grayson today. Coming up in the next hour, we will go further into the problem we've been hearing about in the Mississippi River with the low water levels there, causing problems with barges being stuck, and then also riverboat cruises can't get anywhere. Ernie Goss is an economist for Creighton University. We've talked to him before. He does a really good job boiling that kind of stuff down into ways that those of us that are not economists can understand. We'll get into that further coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. Oddly, I have two stories where sort of the same thing happened, where a board went through somebody's windshield while they were driving. One of these is out of Derby, Kansas. The other one is out of Australia. We'll do the one here out of Kansas first. And it just got my attention because it's just such a scary experience when you are driving down the highway or driving down the interstate and something just comes out of nowhere and goes through your windshield, right? And the closest I've ever had that happen is, it was actually the very first day of the show. I was on my way into the station and a rock hit my windshield and shattered it while I was on my way here. That's the closest I've ever come, but I've never had something go through my windshield. So KWCH out of Wichita had the story. There was an 18-year-old, kid's 18 years old, a 2x4 somehow fell from a truck and went through the windshield of the Jeep. They were on K-15, for those who know that. Teen was driving home when a small car in front of her Jeep swerved. The teen also swerved. The next thing she knew, there was a piece of wood in her windshield. Never saw the truck carrying the wood. This was a girl that was in the car. Shaken up, but physically okay. There was somebody else that stopped to make sure everything was fine. Cannot imagine.
It's hard in those situations not to overreact. And I will say, like, I credit some technology solutions. This, like Waze does a good job of saying object in the road ahead. And then you get a chance to let it know if it's still there or not. But I will say, like, that helps you be able to be proactive.
Yeah.
Because it's the overreaction of a driver. Or like if the car in front doesn't see it and hits the object and then you're right behind, there's nothing you can do. Or you swerve, hit another car. It can be cataclysmic effects, any objects in the road. But there are rules around, like, if you're going to carry lumber, for example, and it sticks out over a certain, if you got to have the red flag or some markers to indicate the depth in which that is sticking out of your car. But it doesn't mean if you slam on the brakes, some of that can't come flying out, which sadly looks like it does happen.
Luckily, it went through the passenger side of the windshield. it came through at an angle, and there are pictures here, where it was, it went through right at the rearview mirror. So pretty high up in the windshield, and went through at an angle through to the passenger side. If it had been on the other side of that mirror, this would have ended totally differently. And I cannot imagine a situation like that. Like, you hope you're going to be calm whenever something like that happens.
How
do you not, what's your reaction as a driver when all of the sudden, again, I don't, you know, a pebble will hit my windshield or something, and you have that moment of panic.
Well, and this is the time of year where deer are in the rut season.
Yeah,
no kidding. So they're just acting like idiots out there and walking through highways and whatnot. And that is something that causes more harm than anything does. But also, it's typically the driver's overreaction to a deer in the road.
Mm-hmm.
And it is tough. Like, in that very split second, you have to decide, do I hit this deer or do I try to swerve?
Yeah.
And if you swerve, odds are not in your favor of a better outcome than just going for it. And I know that sounds horrible, that the safer option is to obviously injure the animal.
Mm-hmm.
But in some cases, like, that animal's ended up in the face or lap of the driver because they didn't see, or the animal's running across the road, not just standing in the road. But it's the reaction. It's so hard to think that you'll be able to handle that situation when you're in it.
And just stop and get the car off the road. Because that's the first thing is...
Yeah, you're in that K-15, you're on a highway.
Yeah.
And piece of wood, maybe no one else saw it. Sounds like some drivers did in this example. But you can't just stop in the middle of the highway. That's another very dangerous thing to do too. So, I mean, I empathize a lot with anyone in these situations because there's a lot of adrenaline going at that point.
So the other story was out of Melbourne, Australia. Almost the exact same thing happened, except in this case, the board went through the driver's side of the windshield. And the board was wider and, again, goes through at an angle. And I'm not kidding you. It's based on the picture that I have. It's right where your headrest would be. I mean, literally, it gave the driver a black eye. It was the exact same situation. They're on the Metro, the CityLink Highway in Melbourne there. They were going, what I would put it, 60 miles an hour.
When you say driver's side in Australia.
It's the other side.
Okay.
So, yeah,
because
they drive on the other side of the road. So, yes, it's what would be our passenger side is their driver's
side. Left side drive.
So they were going about 60, 65 miles an hour when the object, this piece of wood, they're calling it a plank of wood, and it is wider and not as deep, hit the vehicle, damaged the bonnet. So the, I don't know if the bonnet's the roof.
That's a very Australian word to call your trunk.
Partially entered the cabin through the windscreen or windshield, as we're having to interpret. The male driver suffered a black eye. There was a woman in the passenger seat that was uninjured. So it came in. How the guy only got a black eye?
It sounds like he might have had enough time to brace, but still, there's no guarantee when you're traveling on a highway.
This is a massive flat bore. How it didn't take him at the neck?
Now, I want you to know, I'm not going to lose sleep over the fact that these things happen in the world because it is rare.
It is rare, but it's scary.
You would be in that situation, but it does kind of reinforce the benefit of being a proactive driver.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was trying to tell my nephew who's going to start driving soon about how to drive and whatnot as we were taking a road trip recently. And I was like, all you have to be is ahead of the car.
Yeah.
But if you're just driving in the moment, you get what you get.
Yeah. You just have to pay attention always. Be aware of what's around you if there's a truck that has stuff on it. But there's only so much you can do to be prepared in a situation like that. And again, how this guy only got the black eye is a miracle based on how fast he was going and how fast the truck must have been going when the plank flew off as well.
Should have seen the other guy.
Unbelievable. Ryan Weber is in for the vacationing John Grayson. We will take a break. Be back here in the next hour here in KMBZ.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.